Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Moving to Orlando show, coming to you from the Bob Varley studio in Orlando, Florida. I'm your host, Pete Werner, joined at the table this week by my business partner and realtor, Mr. Sean Falk.
Hey, everyone.
Realtor Ruben Colon.
Hi there.
Realtor Danielle George.
Hello.
Realtor Drake Shadwell.
Good to see you, everybody.
And I'm a realtor as well, and not a realtor, our producer, Corey Fiascanaro.
Howdy, neighbor.
And before we get started, if you are interested in purchasing a home in the Central Florida area, certainly any of these great folks here at the table can help you. You can go to our website, movingtoorlando.com, fill out the contact form, or you can call us toll-free, 855-650-MOVE. That's 855-650-6683. Or if you're calling from outside the United States, the number is 407-584-3429. And we can help you out. But this week, we wanted to talk about the state of the market right now. It's a big topic among folks looking to move to Orlando because of how crazy the market has been. People are wondering, is it cooling off? Is it changing? So I want to make sure every month or every 2 months we're doing a video where we kind of address that, which is what we're going to do today. So before we get into metrics and data, I want to ask these folks, these four folks here who are out in the field every single day, what are you guys seeing? How is the market for you right now? What changes are you seeing?
I mean, personally, I haven't seen a huge shift. I still think it's super busy. A lot of it, I mean, people say like data and numbers and all this kind of stuff, like what's the market doing or what's this, but they talk about it as this one encompassing piece. Whereas one person might be looking for a $250,000 house, another person might be looking for a $3 million house, and it's very different markets. It's very different experiences for those people. So, I mean, I think that if you're in 200 to, I think if you're looking under $500,000, you're going to be in a very, very competitive market. If you're between $500,000 and $750,000, then I would say you're maybe going to have one or two other people you're kind of competing with. But people are still going pretty close to asking price. And I think if you're getting more towards the luxury market, there's a little more flexibility, not because something's happening with that market, but just because a lot of people want to free up their money to do other things. They want to, you know, put stuff in stocks. They want to put stuff in other business ventures while interest rates are still low for other things. So a lot of that tends to be people moving up, like, oh, I'm selling my $750,000 house because I'm getting a $1.25 million house type range. So,
okay.
And I'm out with, I work with a lot of people right now in that 250 to 450 mm-hmm. range. I have a couple of clients right now, and we're still struggling to get contracts. Like we talked about, I like writing contracts and contract and contract and contract and contract. And now it's become the thing of they come into town. We do, you know, a lot of showings and we put in offers on three or four of the homes that we saw the showings for, and they don't get any of them, and they go back home. And now I'm working sight unseen and giving them videos and still putting in offers and offers. And I mean, I can look in my Dropbox and see I've got 15 videos for one client, and we've put in offers on at least half of those.
That's actually a funny thing because I saw those come through on my Dropbox, and I'm like, how many home tours did you do I need to edit?
No. Fortunately, I'm not sending those to Fiasco to edit. They're walk and talks. But I mean, you get a good idea of like those are showings, and then at least like a little under half of those we're putting offers in on, and we're still struggling. The one saving grace is if they can put a little bit of money over the appraised value. Like that is the one thing that is getting people's bids, for me, at least accepted.
But you're still finding it a very competitive market.
Oh, yeah. It will be for a long time.
And it's, you know, and according to a lot of reports, and again, we're not financial advisors, so do not take any of this as financial advice. But a lot of the stuff that I'm reading in trade publications is that they are expecting this to remain through 2022. That, I mean, we looked at, for the month of September, which is the last full month for which we have data available, you know, year over year, the sold dollar value, sold dollar volume in this market was up 13.3% over September of last year. Number of closed sales went down 3%, but the median price of a sold home in this market is up 21% over last September. So, you know, the the big problem we have is inventory, number of homes that are available. And that's what's kind of creating this insane market, is that there just isn't a lot of inventory. We are still less than 1 month of inventory. A balanced market is considered 6 months of inventory available. So that kind of gives you an idea of how lopsided. That's why it's a seller's market right now. Mm. There's just a lot fewer homes for sale.
Well, last year, I know at one point we had a couple shows, especially early on, about like, should you rent for a year or should you just go ahead and purchase something? I was very, very anti renting, even though it would make you, you know, give you an opportunity to see, you know, what's in the area and stuff. I was, you know, really like beating it in there. Like, no, you do not want, like, I do not suggest renting for a year. And even then, like, some of the feedback that came back was like, well, you're a realtor. Like, of course you'd want me to go and buy a house. But I was like, and here we are a year later, my same people that rented, they can't afford anything now. So like, or what they can get is significantly less quality and they don't qualify for more money than they did last year. So like, if they'd got something last year, they could have got things that really worked for them. And then now this year, they're having to make a lot of sacrifices on cosmetics, especially.
Plus, they're about to get a real sticker shock come December, January, when their lease is up. Because every one of my friends is telling me the same story of my rent's going up. My, you know, I've got, especially people that are working at Disney, I've got four or five of our friends all, you know, we got each got a room in a house. We're paying $450 a month. And now our rent's about to be $650. Mm-hmm. That is not a small increase when you're talking about rent. Like, that's, and so those prices are going up too. Like, we're not seeing it just in the housing market. We're seeing a rental market increase as well. And it's going to be harder and harder to rent. It's going to be harder and harder to get into a home.
If I stayed in my apartment and didn't buy the house that we bought last year, my rent for that 2-bedroom apartment would be up matching what my mortgage is for a 3-bed, 2-bath house with a pool.
It's insane.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I tell people all the time. I'm like, hey, you have to take it. There's so many factors to take into account. Because for some people, they're like, well, the value's not much. And I hear so many times, well, they didn't pay that much for the house. Like, I can look back. They bought the house in 2017 and they bought it for $150,000 less dollars. They did. Like, you know, that's true. Like, it, but that's not what the going rate is anymore. It's just like anything else with the supply and demand portion of things. But it is a situation where you have to look at if it's valuable to you. I have, you know, had plenty of people go over the appraised value of a house, and you need to think about how long you're going to be in it. Like, maybe you're paying a little over now to get in the house, but is your mortgage going to be cheaper than what your rent would be if you had to rent? As you build equity, especially. And then when you go to sell the house, I mean, people usually keep their home anywhere from 7 to 15 years. What will the value of your house be then? There's plenty of people who bought in 2006, at the height of the bubble, and they've sat around for a while, especially 5 years later in 2011. They're like, oh, I got screwed because, you know, now my house is worth a fraction of what I paid for it in 06. But if they held out for the 15 years that is the standard, that's now, like, we're at 15 years since 2006 when the thing, everything was at its highest, and it's a higher value. There's people who were upside down and now they're not upside down anymore. So, you know, things change and things grow and up lower and all that kind of stuff. So it's about picking areas that hold value and, what's the value of the house going to be at the time later that you want to go sell it, because it is an investment. And that's why, with anything else, if you're going to put money in the stock market and it, you know, tomorrow it's, you have to ride the ups and downs of that, just like any other, that's an investment. Like, it goes up and down.
Yeah. And I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Ruben. I was just going to say, you know, of course, coming from me, talking about the new build side of things, two things that I wanted to point out is that, you know, there's a lot of people doing exactly what Sean was just talking about. They would buy new build, get under contract, And then, you know, 8-9 months, it will be completed. Once it's completed, they're like, wow, you know, the price of the home is worth a lot more. Let's turn around and just resell it and make that profit. And a lot of people are doing that. And people seem shocked when they see, hey, they bought it, you know, less than a year ago for X amount. And now here they are selling it for $150,000 to $200,000 more. So it is what it is. It's unfortunate. Not unfortunate for the sellers, of course, whenever they're doing that. But it's just something that they tend to do a lot. And I will say the one thing that has gotten better are waiting lists with new builds. There's you talked about like 5-6 months ago, like at the beginning of this year, the waiting list, you would have to wait like, you know, 4 months before you eventually get your clients an opportunity to get a new build. Yeah. That's the one thing that has improved. There are still some bids on lots on some of the communities. The prices have not improved. They've, you know, continued to increase, but at least the waiting lists themselves have actually dropped down, and you do have opportunities to get under contract within a month in most communities now.
Now, let's talk about one of the other, you know, big news items right now is the collapse of Zillow's
iBuyer program.
You're not familiar with this. If you've been living under a rock, you know, Zillow had, you know, this program where they were basically buying people's houses sight unseen, paying well over market value for them, fixing them up and attempting apparently to resell them based on their analytics about where home prices would go. And it turned out their analytics were kind of wrong. And as a result, they were losing money to the point where they had to lay off 25% of their staff and literally close down that business. And everybody's, you know, a lot of people I've talked to are saying, oh, look, that's a sign that the bubble is getting ready to burst. And it really isn't, but we're not going to go too far down that road. What do you guys think of the death of Zillow's? I mean, because there are other companies still doing it, but what do you think of the death of Zillow's iBuyer program?
I'm very happy. Personally,
because they're a pain to deal with.
Yes, I have a person under contract with Zillow right now, and we paid over $15,000 over appraised value for the home. They have been. It's just hard to talk to them, hard to get an actual person on the phone. It's all through email. You really don't know who you're dealing with. So it's frustrating on the buyer side. You know, when they're talking to us and they're like, "Hey, we want to negotiate something." Well, I'm waiting 5-6 days to hear from somebody because I don't have a contact number. So in that regard, I'm happy that we won't have to be dealing with a bigger corporation. We can actually deal with real people. So I'm happy in that regard.
And you'd think that like it feels like it makes sense that a huge company like Zillow, this is exactly what to streamline the process. You know, you have a dedicated realtor, you have a dedicated transaction coordinator, you have a dedicated repair coordinator, and intellectually on paper, it makes sense. Oh, it's great. You have a specialist, and then it doesn't work because the realtor has to talk to the transaction coordinator to talk to the repair coordinator. And that does. They require, you know, a 48-hour window to get the simplest request fulfilled. It's like, well, we can't make any decisions and we're trying to get something done in 30 days. And when you're trying to cut through all of that red tape with Zillow, it really slows down and bogs down the transaction. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was some of what was causing problems in their program, is that their process is so slow that they were struggling with transactions. But their official release was that they couldn't predict what it would do to their bottom line. And it was making too volatile of a business for Zillow. And so I don't know if OfferPad and Opendoor and those other programs are going to start seeing some of those same problems.
That's exactly what I was about to bring up, actually. And actually, I wanted to ask you, I don't know if you ever got around to do it, because I know you were looking at it just to kind of see the Opendoor. So I don't know if you want to talk, because I'm actually curious about how that turned out.
It didn't. Okay. No. It did work out. I did it with Zillow and Opendoor just to see both.
I'm sorry. What did you do?
I put my own house to see what it would be. Like, I never had any real intention of selling my house. I just wanted to get quotes to see what they would buy my house for. And this was back, you know, 6 months ago, 7-8 months ago, something like that. But I was like, I want to test this out. Now, I could talk. I literally, we could have a I could do my own show for like 45 minutes to an hour on what happened with Zillow, but because it's very intricate and it's a huge mess. But as far as that went, I paid $176,500 for my house in 2017, and Zillow Sight Unseen offered me $293,700 for my house. They told me that if I did a video, that might go up. So I did a video for them, and they changed their offer to $315,000, like such and such dot, whatever it was. I have a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house that's not even 1,400 square feet. So not one house in my neighborhood at that same thing. There's not one comp that came anywhere close. Even now, like we're talking 6-7 months ago, like you could get my neighbor's house was for sale at that same time. It sold for $241,000 and it has a pool and mine doesn't. So, and they were offering me over $300,000 for my house. So even now, I don't think I could sell my house for $315,000, as crazy as it is.
And this is where that whole thing is broken, because from the seller's standpoint, when you put your house up for sale, and you know, because normally if you're going to sell your house, you know, you need to fix stuff. You need to put a new roof on, or you need to fix your water heater or anything that's wrong. We all have stuff that's wrong with our homes that we would need to fix if we were going to sell. And they come along and say, you don't have to worry about any of that. We'll take care of all that. And we're going to give you this crazy amount of money. So from the seller's standpoint, that's fantastic. But then I don't think Zillow considered that someone has to buy it. Someone has to buy it. And that process is going to matter. That process is going to matter. And of course, supply chain issues have affected their ability to repair and fix up some of these homes. Plus, from what I read, some of the contractors they would use in different markets weren't very reliable and weren't doing a good job. So houses were having trouble on inspection. And so really it seemed like they just thought about buying up as many homes as they could. And now they're looking to, you know, everyone's favorite two words right now, institutional investors, to offload these homes that they have because they just want to get some money for it and get out.
Yep.
So people like, oh, you know, because they bought up a lot of homes, maybe that's going to help inventory. I don't think it is.
No. And that's, I mean, I have a couple of points in there. Number one, if the market were going into a downturn, institutional investors would not be bulk buying Zillow's things they're trying to throw away at this point, because they're institutional investors. They literally do this for a living to buy things and sell them for more value. If the market was downturning, institutional investors would not be interested in this. No different than like hedge fund. People are not going to buy a stock that they know is about to crash. Why would they do that? So like it just ends up being that situation. That being said, a few of the homes that we've done home tours on are Zillow and Open Door listings. We did a 3-bedroom recently in Kissimmee, where they had done a garage conversion into a bedroom. That was one. We've done a few of them throughout. We had a 5-bedroom that was like 350 something with a pool. That was a Zillow listed home. And I always found that the Zillow offer pad, whatever houses, tended to be homes that needed some stuff. Like I would often find wood rot. I would often find like early signs of wood rot. I'd find signs of just problems like going on within the house. And it always just seemed like something people were like, okay, this is an easier option for us than selling on the traditional market. That being said, I think Zillow's main problem is they should have let people list their house with them, and then they should have made those customers sign a contract with them that they would then purchase a house through one of the Zillow realtors, because that would have kept all the commissions in house and it would have saved them a bunch
of
money.
Don't give them ideas.
Yeah, I mean, No. That's what they should have done. Well, they're not doing it anymore, but that's, I mean, here I sit like me coming up with this. So like, I mean, if Zillow didn't come up with it already, I figure somebody on their board, then they're right where they should be, I guess, because I mean, there's nothing illegal about that. There's plenty of realtors out there who we don't do it. Like where we make people sign buyer contracts, but it's very common where people do it. Zillow easily could have sold someone's house in Kentucky and said, we have a preferred agent down here, which they absolutely do. They would have said, hey, you have to use our preferred agent. And that would have kept the commission in-house. So that would have helped them. That would have helped them on all their stuff, because they already make you use their title company. They already make you have to use Zillow Title. You have to use that's their closers, that kind of stuff. It would have kept all their stuff in-house, and that would have saved them a lot of money. I was floored when I figured out they weren't doing that, because one of the ones that's here that's a Zillow agent is an EXP agent. And I'm like, okay, then you're not a Zillow agent. So they're obviously even outsourcing that part of this business. And obviously not, so it's not a thing where just the buyer's agent has to be paid. That seller's agent has to be paid. So like there was an additional person that had to get paid, and it's thousands of dollars. So
yeah.
I'm not shocked at all that this is where they ended up, because who would do that? Like, that makes no sense.
It's really interesting if you actually look at the breakdown in the contracts, because Zillow has their own contract, actually. Mm-hmm. They don't use the as-is FAR/BAR. So in the contract.
Okay, and the as-is FAR/BAR
is the
standard contract used in Florida when you buy a home. So mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that as we're throwing these terms around, that we're explaining to people what we're talking about. Because again,
right.
Realtors, not realtors.
Sorry. But in there, it tells you how the fee breakdown of how much they are charging you at closing. In the closing costs, we see now where Zillow would get paid is in mm-hmm. these closing costs.
It's
because they are it's insane. Usually closing costs about 3%, 5% of the purchase price. But with Zillow, they just gave these open-ended ranges. Like, it could fall anywhere between these. So just be ready for that. So that's how they're making their money, or were.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things, and again, I know this sounds self-serving, but if you've watched any of my other shows, you know that I'm very honest, whether it is good for my business or not. A lot of people are waiting for prices to drop. And again, not financial advisors. No one knows what the market will do. But smart people who've been following this for a long time are all saying the same thing. They're not going down anytime soon. They're not going down. So if you're sitting on the fence waiting for this, you know, you're thinking this is 2006 and the bubble's going to burst and these houses are going to be $20, it doesn't look like that's about to happen. The situation going on now with the price of houses is very different than the situation. The situation in 2006 was because of bad mortgages. Because of bad mortgages. They made mortgages available to people that could not afford to repay them. It created this glut of buyers in the market. So it became a seller's market, drove the prices up, and then these mortgages all failed. That's not what's driving this. Now, is that to say that there won't be some kind of market correction? There always is. I just don't know when it's going to happen. And based on what I'm reading, not next year. They're not seeing it for next year.
And I don't. I'm only specifically just because I do know interest rates are also going up. Mm-hmm. So that is something that could affect, you know, the actual sales, like the sales price at least. But that's still a disadvantage of waiting, because interest rates scare me a lot more than, you know, the sales price of the home itself.
Yeah.
That's what's really going to eat at you. So it's still not good to wait, but interest rates specifically is scary to me versus the sales price.
I did the math on like a 1% increase on a $350,000 home, and it's ridiculous. It's like mm-hmm. it's upwards of $100,000, I think, over the course.
Over the course of the loan life. It can be very, very expensive. And I mean, we're looking at this point. I mean, right now you still can get something, you know, between 2.8% and 3.1% interest rate. It's looking like it's going to jump to about 3.7% by this point next year, which I mean is a pretty significant hefty jump. And I think some of that's understanding how and why things like that happen. If you want to keep track of that kind of stuff, you can literally Google 10-year treasury bonds, and that's literally the chart that this goes based off of. So you're going to look at that. It's how are people buying bonds? How are people buying? You know, what is the treasury doing? What is the actual like department doing as far as finance goes? And it has been run. They have been essentially this government agency has been kind of purposefully undercutting themselves to keep these interest rates low. And there's only so long they can do that before you enter this crazy hyperinflation portion of things, because they need to start collecting on some of this money. And they've been doing this for quite some time to keep interest rates low. And it's been great. And it's really helped economically. But it's not sustainable forever. And so they have to start going up on interest rates at a federal level in order to buy back some of this, or in order to actually close out some of these deals and these loans that they're backing and that they're doing through that 10-year treasury chart that you can go look at and to check out the line graph there. But that really is what changes things. And you have to stay in front of that, and you have to make decisions based on where that's going to go. But even if it jumps to 3.7, that's still significantly better than it was even 5 years ago. I mean, even when I bought my house in 2017, the average rate was over 4% at that point. I would have had to find an exceptionally good credit to get under 4%. So it's even with it going to 3.7, it's not like this thing where it's going to kick a ton of people out of the market. You're just going to pay more money to the bank rather than paying money on your own house when you could pay down your, you know, I would rather things stay higher as far as the purchase price goes. And especially if you buy in a neighborhood and you pay over the appraised value, your home becomes a comp at that point. So an appraiser will now use your house as a comparable for other houses in the neighborhood. So in a lot of ways, you would be better off paying more money for a house, even if it's over the appraised value, and doing a lower interest rate, because then your neighbors, their homes will sell for more money, and it climbs and climbs and climbs. So you get more equity in your house. The value of your neighborhood stays high, and it stays consistently high. You don't want people, if you get $100,000 off a house you put a purchase in on, it's now a comp. So you may hurt your whole neighborhood if enough people are able to do that. So
yeah, but I think you in really this don't market, want that, I think so. In this market, people would be just fine with that.
Oh yeah,
just, let's just get the house, because what's really happening here is this lack of supply is what's driving people out of the market, because they can't buy a house, and especially in that 250 to 450 range, getting an accepted offer, because 80 people are going for that same house. And after a while, people are like, you know what, I'm going to wait. And unfortunately, the problem with that in this market is that the longer you wait, the higher the prices are going. And more likely, as Sean was saying, that the interest rate is going to go up as well. And so that's the danger. But again, no one can predict. We can't predict the future. We don't know what we're going to be talking about a year from now. Wow, look how much these prices have increased, or wow, look how this, like, the bottom fell out of this. We don't know. I mean, we can just kind of take a look at the information that we have and try and read the tea leaves. And this market here in Orlando is still very hot. As it's not quite as hot as it was maybe 6 months ago, but it's still hot and it's still tough. It's still tough, unless you're in that luxury market where it's a little less competitive. Mm-hmm. It's very competitive. So having talented, knowledgeable realtors on your side working for you to find all these opportunities is a great thing. And just so happens, I have a table full of them here that are more than happy to help you. MovingToOrlando.com. Of course, you can give us a call. Toll-free within the U.S., 855-650-MOVE. That's 855-650-6683. Outside the U.S., 407-584-3429. One of these great folks here can help you out. And that will do it for our show for this week. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you again next week with another episode of the Moving to Orlando Show.